Today's program is brought to you by the Academy Opus Cassius, the cheese industry's unique center for professional development. For more information and to apply for courses, visit our website at www.academymons.com. That's academiemons.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello, this is Diane Stemple on Cutting the Curd. I'm sitting here with Lou DiPaolo, owner of DiPaolo's in Little Italy, and author of the very fascinating book, DiPaolo's Guide to the Essential Foods of Italy. Welcome, Lou.
Well, it's great to be here, Diane. I'm really excited.
It's so nice to have a returning author on my show. We're just catching up, and we may discuss the book and may not. It was out in, I think, 2014.
That's right. That's right. It's still doing well. People are really coming around. I'm getting letters all the time about people picking the book up and saying how much the book means to them.
Because, yeah.
You know, the book is so much more than just a book on food and cheese and, mm-hmm. and Italian culture. It's about how food brings people together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I'm getting most of my response from people, mm-hmm. saying how it invokes memory for them.
Mm-hmm. I think what the food traveler would be looking at in the book is that you highlight the best of your producers in Italy, and you talk about them and you go visit them, and whether it's salt or vinegar or cheese, it's all there.
Well, you see, we're a family business, over mm-hmm. 100 years, going mm-hmm. back to my great-grandfather. And the book is based on families. Mm-hmm. All the people that mm-hmm. I deal with are families.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are large producers, but many of them are small producers that start from the farm all the way to the manufacturing of the product.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically what I'm interested in, bringing the mm-hmm. stories of the families to the American consumer, to mm-hmm. understand that the foods of Italy, the traditions behind them go back, and I'm able to give that opportunity to the American consumer to experience
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm. And to then go meet the people who are actually making the food and get to know them on a level, too.
I break bread with them.
Mm-hmm.
I learn
mm-hmm.
about them, their families. I meet their grandparents, their children,
mm-hmm.
and see their passion and try to absorb some of their passion so I could give that passion and translate it to selling the product.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, I find when I'm selling cheese, if I like the cheesemaker, I like the cheese and want to sell the cheese. Do you sometimes get a little confused if you really like someone?
If I really like someone and they produce really good product, yes.
Okay.
I don't get confused, but I'm happy to sell their product.
Okay. Now, do you have plans? My first question is, do you have plans for another book? Will you be coming on the show a third time with another book?
Well, presently, the book is in my head, so to speak. If you understand the book that I have written, it started off at the turn of the last century with my great-grandfather
mm-hmm.
settling here in New York City's Little Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And it went all the way to World War II. And then from World War II, it jumped into Italy and my travels to Italy. The
mm-hmm.
entire time mm-hmm. of me growing up at DiPaolo's, my sister Marie, my brother Sal, working together with our parents, and is not in the book.
Oh, you skipped that part.
I skipped that part and went right to Italy.
Okay.
So there is a big story that's behind the growing up at DiPaolo's,
mm-hmm.
as well as what took place in the community
mm-hmm.
in the last 50 years.
Right.
And that needs to be told mm-hmm. through food.
Right.
Of course, through food. And through many of the products, many of the products that I unfortunately wasn't able to fit into the first book.
Oh, well, I figured there were more products.
Oh, so
there
much
have
more.
To be so, more so products because there are more products than the store.
So much more that I'd like to really give the knowledge mm-hmm. to the people.
Now, do you discover new producers all the time on your trips?
I'm always looking for what is old in Italy. What I mean by that is the traditions of Italian food mm-hmm. are so widespread. Certain types of pastas, certain types of cheese, these are historical products that haven't really been discovered yet in mm-hmm. the United States. I'm always looking. In the 20 regions of Italy, there's so many stories behind so many food items, mm-hmm. and that needs to be told, and I'm always looking for them.
Okay, so you have new producers, but they're probably old.
I guess you could say
they're new to us or new to you, but they might be old to Italy.
Traditional to Italy.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, do you ever cross people off? Do you ever have fights or their standards go south? Or?
Well, I wouldn't say I have fights. Okay. I look at it as always having friends. Mm-hmm. and associates in this particular business.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is my friends, of course, are people that I've come to really know and respect and enjoy the products that they produce, and some mm-hmm. associates that I'm still seeking, learning mm-hmm. from them. And do I cross people off? Not really. I might mm-hmm. I might find an alternative, mm-hmm. something a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I don't really discard mm-hmm. People that I've had a relationship with in the past.
Okay. So you might have something that's new for now, but not give up the old completely.
Absolutely. It's always an expanding venture for me.
Okay. Now, how many trips a year do you do, and how long are they?
The last trip I did was in October. It was at the end of September into October. It was a very long trip for me. It was 19 days.
Mm-hmm.
I can travel to Italy for as little as 3 or 4 days,
mm-hmm.
and very rarely will I stay a 19-day trip.
Okay.
You know, it's because...
Who comes with you?
Well, I've been taking on many occasions my daughter, Caitlin. She's mm-hmm. been traveling with me a lot. She's a very good assistant.
Mm-hmm.
My son Sam, he spends a lot of time in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
I go less frequently than I did in the past
mm-hmm.
because I rely a lot on my son Sam. He studied in Italy for 4 years. He's got mm-hmm. a good command of the language.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a lot of respect for the traditions of mm-hmm. food and understanding of both food and wine.
Mm-hmm.
So
he went to school there?
Yes, he was in school in Piemonte. He went to the...
Did he go to Bra?
Yes, he was,
oh.
He was at the first class at the University of Gastronomic Science.
Oh.
And... it changed his life.
Huh.
He became...
Oh, I can imagine.
Oh, it changed his life. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was...
Especially being in the first class must have been very exciting.
And very special.
Yeah.
Very special.
Yeah.
Let's
explain to the listeners, in case they don't know, though most cheese listeners know about Bra, it's the slow food university, basically.
That's right.
And it's near Piemonte?
It is in Piemonte, the town of Bra, but it's actually located in Polenza,
right,
which
right.
is about 2 kilometers from the city of Bra.
Right.
And it's in an old, would you call it a castle or old an estate?
Uh-huh.
It's an amazing experience for anyone that's really interested in food culture,
mm-hmm.
and how, again, the importance of bringing people together and working
right.
together.
And old food and slow food and food from a historical perspective.
That's true. All right, yeah. Absolutely.
So are the classes taught in Italian?
The classes are taught in Italian if the instructor is Italian. But mm-hmm. if the instructor is not in Italian, it's mm-hmm. usually done in English.
Okay.
At least it was at the time when Sam went to the university.
And is it a university or is it a graduate program? Had he already been to college?
Yes. You needed a 2-year college mm-hmm. degree, an associate's degree to go. And then, you see, in Italy, the universities start after 5 years of, say, high school.
Okay.
So you needed an additional couple of years in in at least an associate's degree. Mm-hmm. And then you would get your university degree from the Pollenza School. The school is, limited to the amount of students that they take, mm-hmm. but they have to be more dedicated into the field of food and food mm-hmm. culture.
Right.
It really served Sam well.
Uh-huh. Now, did he know Italian before he got there? Had he studied
Sam,
it?
Sam knew absolutely no Italian.
He went somehow there. I'm not surprised to hear you say that.
He was lost. He was lost for 6 months. And as he said, he went to sleep one night, started to dream in Italian, woke up and spoke Italian.
Oh, my goodness.
And he has no...
At least he was young, because, your brain works better.
It's just amazing. He has no accent.
Do you speak Italian?
I speak what we call Italo-American.
Uh-huh. Okay. And do you speak it at home? Does your wife speak it?
No. Okay. No. My grandchildren speak Italian.
Okay.
And my grands, they actually speak eloquent Italian. I mean, they go to the Italian school, and they're very much into the Italian culture, even though they live here in New York City. Uh-huh. Their father is very Italian. I mean, born in
from Italy.
From Italy. Mm-hmm. And is in the Italian food industry. Mm-hmm. And he, I'll never forget when my grandson Ferdinando was born, and my son-in-law's father came over and said, "This boy better speak Italian, otherwise I will never speak to him." From that moment on, his son only spoke Italian to Ferdinando, and he speaks literally what they call eloquent Italian.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it's nice. They're nice mm-hmm. to have that dual mm-hmm. Language, mm-hmm. and it serves, again, something that's so important in our business, to mm-hmm. be able to communicate in the same language with the people that
right.
you're doing business
especially
with.
Especially if you're in the smaller towns,
sure.
you're not running into people who
and that,
speak
that was
English.
The success of Sam learning Italian, because he was in a town in Pollenza Bra where most mm-hmm. people did not speak English.
Right.
So
right.
he was forced.
I've only been there during the cheese festival, and then it's overrun with Americans and Brits and everybody,
sure.
so everybody's speaking English.
That's right.
But it's a small place, so I can imagine there's not that much English on a normal day.
That's true.
Okay, so let's see. When you go to Italy, is it all work or is it some relaxing vacation?
Let's see. I must have made 70 or 80 trips to Italy. And I have never been there on vacation.
Never?
Never.
Why not?
Even on my honeymoon.
Where did you go on your honeymoon?
Well, on my honeymoon, I started off in... flew into Sicily
uh-huh.
and crisscrossed the country up until we reached Lombardia.
And it was all business?
It wasn't. It was honeymoon. But, I would get Connie up, my wife, mm-hmm. up early in the morning. And I'd say, come on, we're going to this cheese factory, or we're going to this prosciutto factory today. And then we'll go over here. But I mixed it in with, going to Ischia and going mm-hmm. to Taormina and all. So, Lake Como. So I mixed it in, but there was business involved,
okay.
and this was at a very young age, and something I mentioned actually in my book.
Okay,
and she's not too keen on going to Italy, believe it or not.
Well, maybe because she was on a business trip, not a real honeymoon.
I think you might be right.
Where does she want to go for a vacation?
Well, she,
an island.
Yes, she likes the BVI, the British Virgin.
Okay,
islands,
so she wants to totally relax. Yeah.
Sit by the poolside, maybe with a cocktail in your hand.
Right,
not think about cheese.
Dragging her off to a cheese place.
one time, I'll never forget, I took her to a factory where they make Grana Padano cheese. And, Grana Padano is one of the most historic cheeses of mm-hmm. Italy. It goes back over 1,000 years. It's in fact, it changed the name of cheese in the Italian language. A lot of people say, how do you say cheese in Italian? And we say formaggio.
Uh-huh.
But if you go back to the ancient Romans, the word for cheese was cassius.
Ah, right.
And the word that came out of the old Italian language was cacio, C-A-C-I-O, cacio. Uh-huh. In fact, we still use that primarily in southern Italy, cacio cavallo.
Mm-hmm.
But these monks came down. They came down from France and from Switzerland, and they started to make a cheese and put it into a form. Mm. And from the French word fromage, they put it, it became known as formaggio.
Ah.
So 1,000 years ago, they started to use the term for cheese as formaggio from Grana
Padano. Influenced by
that particular cheese. Yes.
Interesting.
You know, it is interesting. All these little stories that you hear, some of them are fact, some of them are fable. They're fantastic in either case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't matter almost whether they're fact or fable. Okay, so have you been to Bra? Have you been to the Cheese Festival?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay.
You know, in fact...
Do you have to go every 2 years?
No. I try to avoid... Unless I'm working for a producer or, you know, to explain, you know, not a consortium. I don't really work for a producer. I work for a consortium that asks me to speak on their behalf.
So you
to
might
explain.
Have meetings. You might be doing a class or something.
I don't usually go to food shows.
Okay. I was going to ask,
And the reason why is that I have a certain direction where I want to go and what I want to do, and I need to go to meet the farmer, meet the producer, meet the people on a direct basis. And naturally, when you go to these food shows, you get some good ideas. You'll see a lot of different products.
But it's all the business people.
Yeah, and there's really no time to talk to people.
Uh-huh.
You know, they're very busy with a lot of people trying to learn about some of the products that I already know about.
Right.
And to take their time away from new people, it doesn't serve me any purpose, doesn't serve most of the people any purpose. So I avoid those shows. But however, the reason Sam went to the school is because on one of the trips to Bra, there was a young girl in one booth, and she said, "We are planning to open a school."
Sam came to me, and he was in
school here in New York, and he wasn't really that enthused.
Right.
So he came over to me and said, "Dad, they're going to have a school here. I'd like to go."
Ah.
And I said, "Well, if you want to go, well, fine." Uh-huh. You know, and it really changed. It changed his whole life.
Well, you were probably happy about it, going to school to study food in Italy.
Truthfully, I was jealous. I wish I had that opportunity. Instead of going, I went to a business school. I went to City University. I got my degree in business. And,
that must have been pretty dry comparatively.
Accounting and law and marketing and management.
Right.
It actually served me well.
Right, right. But it would have been much more fun going to Bra.
It was boring. You're right.
Oh, that's great. So he found a great situation for himself.
Absolutely.
So now does he live here or does he live there? And what's he doing for the company?
He lives both. I mean, we have our place in Spoleto, Umbria.
Mm-hmm.
And
you have a house?
Well, I have the top of a tower.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh,
12th century tower. I have a fantastic view.
Does Rapunzel live there?
Rapunzel doesn't live there, but I'm telling you, it's a beautiful view. The only thing, I was there recently in October, and during one of the major tremors, it wasn't a nice feeling.
How many stories?
Well, it's about 100 and some odd steps up.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
so. You know, I got the highest point, so, you know, I got the view.
No elevator?
No, it's 12th century.
Oh, gosh.
So he loves it, and he spends a lot of time there, much more than me. I usually spend my time there paying bills, and then I get out of there, you know. But it's really center of Italy, and we travel from north to south, and it's a good, what I call, resting place in between. And we have a lot of friends in Umbria, and we do a lot of business in Umbria, so it's just a good part of Italy for us.
Mm-hmm. Now, what products do you get from Umbria?
Well, Umbria, we do a lot with wine,
mm-hmm.
and we do a lot with olive oil and legumes.
Mm-hmm.
Umbria also has a lot of truffle products as well.
Okay.
Some pasta. Mm-hmm. We've imported some of the traditional pastas of Umbria, the stringozzi, it's called.
Mm-hmm.
But primarily it's olive oil. And we have a lot of relationships with different wine producers there that we sell their wine.
Is the wine new for you? I mean, I know the wine store is new.
Almost 8 years.
Okay.
Almost 8 years. That was, we're five generations in the business, each generation has given its own contribution to the business. And the fifth generation, the contribution
has added one.
Remember, Sam studied
what
in
were they thinking?
He studied in Piemonte. Okay? Piemonte is such a big spot for Italian wine.
Right.
And Sam had developed a passion for really good wine and good knowledge on it. In fact, the school in Polenza has what they call Banco di Vino. If you go down into the cellar of wine, it's an amazing one chamber after another of some of the great wines of Italy.
Because they're studying them.
Yeah.
Storing and studying.
Storing and studying. Yes.
Okay, it's time for our break. This is Diane Stemple talking to Lou DiPaolo on Cutting the Curd. We'll be right back.
The Academy Opus Cassius is the cheese industry's unique center for professional development, offering both practical and classroom training for cheese professionals ready to move their careers to the next level. The Academy is the only professional cheese school integrating hands-on practice, formal instruction, and curriculum-related visits in every course, and attracts students from such diverse countries as Australia, Venezuela, Ukraine, Canada, Sweden, Kenya, and India. Cheesemongering, cheesemaking, and affinage courses form the core curriculum. Sensory analysis training is practiced daily in every program. New in 2017, Ivan Larcher will be teaching Cheesemaking 201, a deep dive into specific cheesemaking technologies. This course will be held at Mons Classroom in Ambières, France. February will focus on lactic set and Tom. May will concentrate on soft ripened bloomy and washed rind cheeses, and September will cover blues and semi-cooked styles. Space is limited and prerequisites apply. And a news flash. Due to a cancellation, there is now one precious spot available for Cheese in Paris, an insider's tour, February 27th to March 2nd. This is a jam-packed 4 days of backstage visits to cheesemongers and makers in and around Paris, exclusively for cheese professionals. Apply now, and don't forget, airfares to France are at their lowest point and the dollar is strong against the euro. For more information and to apply for this and other courses, visit our website at academymons.com. That's academie-mons.com.
Hi, Diane Stemple back again on Cutting the Curd with Lou DiPaolo, talking about Italian food, Italian things. I wanted to ask a few questions about Little Italy. Are you worried about Little Italy?
Diane, Little Italy is today the spirit of the Italian immigrant.
Okay.
And the spirit of Italian immigrant lives with families like mine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people say, oh, what happened to this neighborhood? What happened to the Italians? What happened to Little Italy?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Little Italy became part of mainstream America.
Mm-hmm.
Immigration laws change, and we are all immigrants. But the laws change over years, the Italians' immigration was basically the door was closed for Italian immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
Little Italy was always meant to be a stepping stone, a place to come to America.
When you first came.
You came here, you settled in an area where they spoke your language, they understood your customs, mm-hmm. and then as your children went to school.
And you could buy your food.
Buy your food. That's the last thing we lose in our culture, by the way, is the foods we eat.
I think you're right.
We change our language, we change our address. But we always identify ourselves with our culture through the food that we eat.
Right.
And today, Italian food is American food because it's so part of the American culture, whether you're here in New York City, Los Angeles, or in the Midwest. And Little Italy is one of the testaments in the United States of the Italian immigrant and what the contributions that they brought to the United States, and many contributions the Italians have made, as every ethnic group did.
Mm-hmm.
But the Italians were building the water tunnels and bridges, and the Italians in arts and in science, in politics.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, one of the great contributions was food.
Mm-hmm.
On my block, Grand Street, between Mott and Mulberry.
Yeah.
There are four families that have been in business for over 100 years.
Really? Now, and they're still there.
And they're still there.
You're not the only one.
And that's the testament. That's the testament of the spirit of the Italian immigrant.
But did your family used to live around the corner? And did all those families used to live there? And does anyone live there now?
Well, strangely enough, everybody's returning.
Oh, everybody's returning. Oh, that's nice. Okay. Have you moved back?
I live very close in Little Italy.
Oh,
okay.
When did you move back?
Quite a few years ago. Little Italy is not just Little Italy anymore. It's a gentrified community.
Right.
It's fashionable to be there. I mean, people say it's Chinatown. Chinatown, unfortunately, is going the way of Little Italy. It's shrinking now.
Yeah.
And why? Because real estate values have gone up so much that immigrants cannot afford to rent the apartments there.
Mm-hmm.
Condominiums are coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Hotels are coming up. Fashionable stores and clothing stores and restaurants. And it's so much more than just the Italian or the Chinese
community.
What
used to be Soho has moved down to Chinatown in Little Italy.
Moved east.
Mm-hmm.
And even further east.
Mm-hmm.
The area is becoming so widely gentrified.
Mm-hmm.
But this is happening all through New York, New York City. And so it's become fashionable. I'll never forget my nephew saying he got an apartment on Mulberry Street, and he came in, how excited he was. He said, Uncle Lou, I got my apartment right here on Mulberry Street. I'm paying $3,000 a month rent. Isn't that wonderful? I said, Joe, your great-grandfather is turning in his grave. He couldn't wait to get out of Mulberry Street, and he was paying $8 a month rent. You know? So this is what's happening.
Right, right.
And it's just a great part of New York City's history.
But it must be nice for you to live near the store.
Yes and no.
Where did you live in between?
After World War II, right at the end of World War II, actually just before it ended, my grandmother, because of the illness of my grandfather, moved to Bensonhurst, Brooklyn.
Okay.
And in Bensonhurst, Brooklyn, she managed to get a house with some land, which started to become full of Italians that moved from Little Italy to this area.
Right.
And I know this for a fact. World War II is going on because my father is mentioned in a book. He was very fortunate to come back after World War II. He was shot down over Yugoslavia during the war, and during that period of time of hiding from the Nazis, he came across a fellow who was writing a book, you know, his diary, so to speak. It ended up being a book, and they called my father the Brooklyn Boy. So my grandmother had just purchased a home at that point. So I grew up in Bensonhurst, Brooklyn.
Uh-huh.
After getting married, I moved to Bay Ridge.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm ending up back in
where it all began.
Where my grandparents went up five flights of stairs. And, you know, when.
But I hope you have an elevator there.
Well, I have no problem.
Okay. So you're not worried about the gentrification. You just think this is part of what's going on and the stores will survive because people want to come and buy Italian food.
In part of the stories of my next book talks about this exact same thing, what you're saying about the transition, the survival of a community going through world wars, depression era, changing environment, changing community, changing ethnic groups, and how and why did some people survive and stay and not look to the past, but look to the future? How you can maintain tradition in a new environment?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not worried about becoming of gentrification. I'm not worried about that because we've become
embracing your roots. You're not shunning them.
When the area turned mostly Asian, we were the last Italian store on our block. We were on the northeast corner of Mott and Grand Street, and what was left of Little Italy was Mulberry Street, a whole block away. I said to my brother and my sister, when my father took ill, he couldn't work anymore. He said, "We'll either close the store or if you want it." I said, "Let's." I said to my brother and sister, "Let's not look forward. Let's look back. Let's do everything the way our grandparents did it. Let's make DiPaolo's not an eyesore in a changing community, but a shining jewel. And we focused in on that. And we were accepted.
Now, when was that?
This was about 1990.
Wow.
And we, by doing this, by saying this, mm-hmm. we became more in focus. Mm-hmm. And people would come around. In fact, Martin Scorsese, we did it. I was part of a documentary he did during 9/11. And I had said to him, people have asked me, why would I open an Italian store in a Chinese neighborhood? And the point is that we were here. This was our home. Mm-hmm. And we had roots here. Mm-hmm. And we were able to maintain them. And we were embraced and welcomed mm-hmm. by the new community.
Right.
If I tell you stories that how the Chinese people have accepted DiPaolo's as their store as mm-hmm. well, mm. even though it was contrary to their culture to eat cheese.
Right.
There were certain items in mm-hmm. my place that was something that they sought after. Mm-hmm. And today you come into my place and see how many second and third generation customers, Chinese, mm-hmm. that come in. So I'm not worried about the gentrification. Mm-hmm. We're a destination store as well. Mm-hmm. People travel to us.
Mm-hmm. What places in Little Italy do you either frequent restaurants or recommend now?
Well, you know, that's a touchy subject.
And you're not allowed to recommend things?
No, not a question of recommending. There's so many I would recommend.
Oh, okay.
And it depends on what type of Italian food you are looking for. If you're uh-huh. looking for the Italian American immigrant food, that's the typical red sauce, mm-hmm. spaghetti and meatballs, which doesn't exist in Italy. We know that. Mm-hmm. But spaghetti and meatballs, eggplant parmigiano, shrimp parmigiano, which traditionally you never put cheese on top of fish.
Right,
with very rare exceptions. So I would recommend certain restaurants. Mm-hmm. If you want to go to a restaurant, something that's going to be very rustic and very typical of what you'll find in certain areas of Italy, mm-hmm. I would recommend another one. Mm-hmm. So some of the Mulberry Street restaurants that are wonderful, restaurants such as family-run Lunella and Danico and Il Cortile, these are restaurants that you'll go there and you will enjoy a family atmosphere. Mm-hmm. Pellegrino's, these are restaurants that will give a family atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And then if you want to go and have something rustic and you want to have those typical dishes you'll find in the coastal areas of mm-hmm. of Puglia, mm-hmm. You might want to go to a restaurant like Peasant, mm-hmm. which is, I consider it Little Italy, but now it's considered Nolita, north of Little Italy. Something for real estate people
to invent a name
to increase the rentals.
Mm-hmm. Right, they keep changing the names in Brooklyn, too. You can barely keep track.
This is not Bushwick anymore. It's East Williamsburg.
Right. So what are, since we're on a cheese show, what are your five top cheese sellers in the store from Italy?
Okay, from Italy, I would say definitely number one, the Grana cheeses. Uh-huh. Grana cheeses such as Parmigiano Reggiano mm-hmm. and Grana Padano. Mm-hmm. These are cheeses that have stood the test of time, over mm-hmm. 1,000 years of production. If you asked me the same question 25 years ago, I would have said Provolone.
Oh, okay.
Provolone, the national cheese of Italy, is typical from the south. Most of it's made in the north. Has
the stronger flavor.
The stronger, very picante, very sharp.
I remember that from my childhood, serving it.
Yeah, that was almost on everyone's plate. Mm-hmm. But today, what's selling really well is the Grana cheeses, mm-hmm. Grana Padano, mm-hmm. Parmigiano Reggiano, Pecorino. Mm-hmm. We have over scores and scores of varieties of Pecorino cheese. Mm-hmm. That's Pecora means sheep in Italian.
And so from all over, right?
Traditionally, Pecorino cheese is made from Romagna, Emilia-Romagna, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. the Romagna side mm-hmm. down to the south, mm-hmm. Sardinia, Sicily, mm-hmm. Calabria. But we have many varieties, and the diversity of Pecorino cheese is so. People see Pecorino, it's just Pecorino Romano.
No.
That's just one of many. So the Pecorino family of cheeses are very, very popular today. Mm-hmm. And now, some of the mountain cheeses.
Uh-huh.
The people of the United States are discovering the wonderful cheeses that come from the mountains of Italy, the mountains of Trentino and Alto Adige, where the cows are free grazing, eating the fresh herbs, those the unique cows, the Razza Rendena or the Bruna Alpina or the Grigio Alpina. These are cows that live on the mountains. And what's special is when you get the alpeggio. The French will say alpage, but we say alpeggio. Alpeggio is when the cows are free grazing in the summertime in the higher altitude mountains. The air is very crisp, and the cheese picks up a flavor like you can't imagine.
And those are the cheeses that vary over the course of a year.
That's right, and we like to get always the alpeggio cheeses because we feel that that's going to give you the most assertive flavors. So when I say the most biggest sellers, I'm giving you classifications of cheeses.
Right, that's okay.
and that's really because there's such.
Can you name one or two of those mountain cheeses just so that
the one that's probably the largest produced, and I talk about it in my book, is your is the cheese called Piave. Piave, named after the river, the Piave River, a historical river of Italy. Terrible battle was fought there during that First World War and actually changed the course of the war.
Now, and, I love Piave, but isn't that a somewhat commercial place?
I talk about it in my book. What was the biggest disappointment and the biggest enlightenment that I've ever received in the food business, in the cheese business?
Was when you went there?
When I went to visit the Piave factory. It was the most
and
automated.
It was a factory.
It was the most automated factory I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
Every 12 seconds, a wheel of Piave is stamped out. But what makes this cheese so special?
It's still great.
What makes it special is the milk, is the cows, those free-grazing cows. They've mastered the art of technology with historical cheese making, putting them two together. That was the enlightenment, how they did that. So
maybe that format doesn't suffer from technology either. You know, the larger wheel, or, you know, you don't have to take as much care of the large
wheels. They do, but it's all automated. A robot does everything.
You don't have
everything.
To rub it with your hands.
It's all done. It's unbelievable how it's done, right? Now, I'm looking for the little old cheesemaker.
Right, that's me.
You know? But I mentioned that cheese specifically for that reason. It was in line. But there's so many wonderful artisan cheeses that are up in the mountains that we get. And what makes some cheeses special, I have one friend who produces cheese on a small scale, primarily goat cheeses from free grazing goats. I visited the goats. They live in the you'd be jealous to see where they live, and it's surrounded by the Dolomite Mountains, the most beautiful mountain ranges, and these are free grazing goats, and he makes the cheese in a somewhat artisanal way, and he is sort of like half he's a cheesemaker, but he's also what I call an affinatura. A finisher. And what he does is he'll take that goat cheese and wrap it in walnut leaves. The aroma and the flavor never smells like the barn. Smells wonderful. The flavor is clean. And we call it cacciatone di noce.
I think I've had that.
It's just a wonderful, wonderful cheese because it picks up that flavor of the leaf, but at the same time has the clean goat flavor. So this is what's happening. And now also, and finally, for the other cheeses that are selling really well, it seems that Italian cheeses have learned a lot from the French culture of these soft, ripened cheeses. But not only made with cow's milk, made with buffalo milk, made with goat's milk, and how they will have the same penicillin rind on it, but yet runny, creamy, and cheeses that are made with mixed milk, sheep and cow's milk, goat's milk, cow and sheep. These are all becoming really popular. But if you ask me my favorite cheese...
Yes, okay, I'm asking.
All right. It's the most wonderful... Molto cremoso gorgonzola dolce.
Ah, okay.
I love gorgonzola. When it's made right, it's never bitter.
And the dolce.
I like picante too, but okay. the dolce is the traditional, the blue stracchino. Uh-huh. The stracchino cheese, that cheese that's made from kind of active milk, mm-hmm. the original type of probiotic mm-hmm. food, uh-huh. you know, and that cheese with the blue vein in it, mm-hmm. that penicillin blue vein, but on a very liquid basis. Mm-hmm. Spread it on a pear mm-hmm. or an apple, it's to die for.
Well, on that wonderful note, now I'm starving. I have to go eat some cheese. On that wonderful note, I'll say goodbye to Lou DiPaolo. Thank you so much for coming on the show again.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
It's been Cutting the Curd, Diane Stemple on Heritage Radio Network. You can catch us on Stitcher or iTunes. And please join the radio station, heritageradio.network.org. We'd love to have you. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.